Well, good morning. This is Barry O'Dell with the Church of Christ at Mammoth Spring Facebook page. It is Monday morning, January 8th, 2024. Hope everybody's doing all right today. We are starting a new study this morning. This is a viewer-requested study. It's something that a couple of different people have actually asked for over the last couple of weeks as I was asking for requests. And we're going to start today looking at the intertestamental period. So we'll talk about that here. In just a minute, let's see who we've got joining on. Kyle, Gail, Connie, Sheila, Deborah. I think I mixed up a couple names there. All right. Good to see you guys. We've got others joining on. Of course, we're cross-posted onto the nearchurches.com Facebook page. And if you're watching the video, we're going to have some other stuff on the screen here in just a minute. If you're just listening, well, then you're just listening and you can't see what the video is. But like and share this content. Of course, it can be viewed on our YouTube channel if you don't watch it on Facebook Live. You can go to our YouTube channel, Mammoth Spring Church of Christ, and all of this content is uploaded onto YouTube. Good morning, Margie. Good to see you. The intertestamental period. Okay, so I've done a lot of reading and preparation. I've studied this in the past, but I've never taught it. I've never really taught it. I've mentioned it when we went through the Kings and when we studied the book of Daniel, which was, that's been a little while ago on our live stream, but we studied Daniel. So some of this stuff has come up kind of in passing, but we're gonna hone in on some things. And you say, well, why is this important? There's a lot to learn from the intertestamental period. And it's not just that, but the fact of the matter is, the Old Testament, and particularly the book of Daniel, touches on this subject. Several chapters, in fact, in the book of Daniel touches on the period between what we often refer to as the blank pages. It's been referred to as things like the 400 years of silence, the period, as I had on our, I'll pull it back up here, I had on our intro screen, the period between Malachi and Matthew. So it's known by several different names, obviously. But there is a lot of interesting history here, and again, it is connected to the biblical text. So let me go ahead and pull this up here on our screen if you're watching. I have my Bible app open to Daniel chapter 2 on the screen. Hey, good morning, Melissa. Good to see you. So as always, as we're going through this study, and I don't know how long this will last, how many days or weeks this will last, but there is a lot of content that could be studied and read. I've got a series of articles, and they were written back in, I think, like from 2011 to 2014 by a friend of mine. So I've consulted some of that, and then, of course, various other things. There's a lot of good information on YouTube as well. WVBS has several videos on the YouTube channel on the intertestamental period. Dan Cates does that, does a good job. So there's a lot of information out there. Good morning, Janie, but we're going to do a little bit here and see what we can come up with. So we are in Daniel chapter 2. I think, well, let me start out by saying this. So if you were to read through your Old Testament, again, our English Old Testament is not written in chronological order. It's more topical. Now, as you go through the minor prophets, I would say it is closer to chronological order. But if our Bibles were ordered in that way, your Old Testament would end essentially with Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and Malachi. That's where it would conclude. And then you turn to Matthew chapter 1, and it's like the world is completely different. The way the biblical text is, well, the things that are recorded and what's going on, of course, the focus now in Matthew, beginning in Matthew chapter 1, obviously, is Jesus. And of course, all of your Old Testament prophets, going all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, point to this one who is coming. And of course, that's all of that's fulfilled in Christ. I think of Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4, Jesus was born in the due time. When the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law. The time was right. When Jesus came, it was right. It was the right time for Him to be there. It was according to God's plan. And we will see that as we look at some things in the book of Daniel, this is according to God's plan, according to God's timetable. Hey, Lyle. Hey, Michelle. Good to see you guys. So there is a lot to consider. I'm here in Daniel chapter 2, and I think I've just changed my mind saying some of the things I have said. So let me do this real quick, and then we'll get to Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to go to the end of your Old Testament. I'm flipping over here on our screen to Malachi chapter 4. Now, we just did the Minor Prophets not that long ago. Malachi's written approximately 400 to 450 years before the birth of Christ. And this is how your Old Testament text ends. It kind of leaves a, I don't know how I would say it accurately. Well, it leaves you in suspense, you might say. Malachi chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. Notice, remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. And that's where your Old Testament, again, our English Old Testament, ends. That seems like a weird way to end, because you go from that, this promise of Elijah the prophet. Now, again, if you're a student of the Bible, you know that Elijah, well, he's already lived and died. Okay, so, well, what in the world could that be referring to if he's already died? Well, if you pull up these, like on my Bible app here, you look at these notes, it tells you, well, turn over to Matthew chapter 11. And Jesus here is talking about John the Baptizer and what he has done. Matthew chapter 11 and what verse did it say? Well, it talks about John the Baptizer in that whole section, verses 1 through 17, essentially. Here it is, Matthew chapter 11, verse 10. For this is he of whom it is written, Behold, I will send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you. Assuredly, I say to you, among those born of women, there has not risen one greater than John the Baptizer. So, he connects these prophecies, Malachi chapters 3 and 4, Isaiah chapter 40, of this one who's coming in the spirit and power of Elijah. Jesus connects those, God's messenger, with John the Baptizer. That's how we know what Malachi chapter 4 means. All right, so that's how your Old Testament ends. Well, then you turn from Malachi 4 to Matthew chapter 1, and it just jumps right out at you. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. The New Testament's about something totally different, but the old ends with this promise. And the promise is somebody's coming, and he's going to prepare the way of the Lord. Like I said, I've covered that in other videos. I'm not going to go into any detail about John the Baptizer. But now I am going back to Daniel chapter 2. In Daniel chapter 2, and this, I guess, is where we'll start talking about the intertestamental period. In the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. Nebuchadnezzar is king of what's called the Neo-Babylonian Empire. They came to power in the 7th century BC, about, if memory serves me correctly, around 626 BC. The first king being Nabopolassar, that's the father of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is a prominent character in the book of Daniel. He's also mentioned in, of course, the book of Jeremiah, 2 Chronicles, the end of 2 Chronicles, the end of 2 Kings as the Babylonian captivity is occurring for Israel. So this is a prominent character in Scripture. We're going to line out all these dates. I'm not going to do that today, but we're going to lay out these dates for Babylon, for the Medians and the Persians, Greece and Rome, all of these empires that are essentially changing hands during this, what we call this period of the intertestamental time, the intertestamental period. But we're just looking at some generalities today. Let's think of it that way. Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and it troubles him so much that he can't, obviously he doesn't know what it means, but he can't remember. And so he calls for his, this is Daniel 2 and verse 2, magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell him his dreams. And he wants them to tell not what it means only, but also what the dream itself was, because he was so troubled that he couldn't remember. We're not going to read all of that between there, but we're going to get down here. He's called in Daniel. His guys couldn't do it, okay? So you get down to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 31. Daniel can interpret dreams. He says, "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of gold, fine gold, rather, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold," okay, the whole statue, "were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away. No trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." Daniel chapter 2. So that's Daniel 2, verses 31 to 35. He says, so that's your dream, verse 36. Now I'm going to tell you what it means. Hey, good morning, Anna. And the reason he's going to tell him what it means is look at Daniel 2 and verse 37. "For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom and power, strength and glory." All right? "You are this head of gold," Daniel chapter 2 and verse 38. So obviously, it's easy to understand in terms of what each part of this statue represents. And I've got a good image that we're not going to look at today, but we'll include this in our study, this image of Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's interpretation. Okay, so you are this head of gold, Daniel 2 and verse 38. He's given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory, verse 37. So it's obvious that each of these minerals, I guess, that make up this statue represent kingdoms. Then he goes right on to Daniel 2:39. "But after you shall arise another kingdom." There you go. "Inferior to yours. Then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all others." Again, that part is very simple to understand. The image represents four world kingdoms, starting with Babylon, and then there are three that follow. Now, skipping down here to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44, he goes on to say, "And in the days of these kings, the fourth kingdom, the one that was, the legs were made of iron, the feet were mixed with iron and clay," he says, "in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure." Notice the significance here of that, the last part there, verse 45. The great God has made known to the king. God has communicated, and you know, Hebrews 1 talks about that, how God communicated in various ways and at various times to the prophets, or to the fathers by the prophets. But according to Daniel 2:45 here, God also communicated to people like Nebuchadnezzar. And as you read the prophets, like, and specifically Jeremiah, Nebuchadnezzar is the servant of God. God used him to accomplish his purposes in regard to the southern tribe of Israel, Judah, the problems that they had, the sin that they had, particularly with idolatry. God made Nebuchadnezzar his servant and used him, and he communicated with him. So we're going to kind of, let's store that image away for just a minute, and I'm going to run over now to Daniel chapter 7. So Daniel 2 is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You turn the page to Daniel chapter 7, and you have, now Daniel himself has a dream, and this happens, he says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Well, Belshazzar reigned from 553 to 539 BC. We're getting right towards the end of the Neo-Babylonian Empire. And in fact, the book of Daniel shows us the transition from Neo-Babylon into the Medes and the Persians. Let me just go ahead and mention that here real quick. I've got it. I won't pull it up on my screen, but this is it. Daniel chapter 5, verses 30 and 31. This is after the king of Babylon saw the handwriting on the wall. Daniel 5:30 says, "That very night Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old." Well, that is in the same year that Daniel has this vision in Daniel chapter 7. The kingdom, the dominant world empire, essentially shifts. It changes hands. So notice this dream that now Daniel has in Daniel chapter 2. He says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, 'I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each one different from the other.'" That's Daniel 7:3. Now notice here. So Nebuchadnezzar's dream, there's an image, there's a statue that represents four kingdoms, and it started with Babylon. "You, O king, are that head of gold." What was that, verse 38 of Daniel 2? But anyway, now Daniel's vision is of four great beasts, and each is different from the other. Verse 4 says, "The first was like a lion, had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Now again, there's a lot there. We'll break that down a little bit more in a future video. But what could that possibly represent? If you skip down in Daniel chapter 7 to verse 17, notice this. "Those great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth." So again, we're told what they symbolize. Now thinking of the time frame of the book of Daniel covers about 70 to 80 years. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, those are their Hebrew names, they're taken captive by the Babylonians, by Nebuchadnezzar. In Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel 2, the head of gold is Babylon. In Daniel chapter 7, this first great beast that is a lion that has eagle's wings represents the same, represents the kingdom of Babylon. And so, let me get back up here to Daniel chapter, or earlier in the chapter here in Daniel 7. All right, so you've got the first beast. Now notice what happens to this first beast, this lion with eagle's wings, but the wings were plucked off. You remember how Nebuchadnezzar was humbled. He's walking around his palace, he's talking about his great kingdom and everything that he's done, and then he is, well, he's humbled by God. That's recorded all for us in Daniel chapter 4. You might read that. We're not going to take time to do that all right now, but Daniel chapter 4 gives us that information. Its wings were plucked off. It was brought down. And it was made to stand on 2 feet like a man. Well, Nebuchadnezzar thought himself a deity. Good morning, Susan. Good to see you. Well, then there's another beast, a second, like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, "Arise, devour much flesh." That's an interesting image. Now, you think of a bear. You think of strength. But you notice that this bear, it says it was raised up on one side. If Daniel is seeing a vision that's talking about these world empires, think about what's happening here. All right, so you have Babylon. Daniel chapter 5, we've already read, tells us that Daniel lived in the time between, or the time during the shift from Neo-Babylonia to Medo-Persia with Darius the Mede becoming king. So that's what this second beast, this bear, has to mean. And you notice it says it was raised up on one side. Well, it's a mixture of two empires, you might say, the Medes and the Persians. And again, we'll talk in more detail about that in future videos. But one of those is more dominant than the other. That's why this bear is raised up on one side. And it has three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. Well, there were kingdoms apart from Babylon that the Medes and the Persians were conquering. We'll talk about that too. Verse 6, "After this I looked, there was another like a leopard which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. When you think of a leopard, think of speed. It has four wings, and it has four heads. This is prophetically referencing the Grecian Empire, specifically under Alexander the Great. And after Alexander the Great died, he was about 32 or 33 years old. He had four generals, and his empire, his kingdom, was divided among those four generals. And so this beast has four heads, and dominion was given to it. We'll talk about that. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong, and had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. This is what's called, we talk about this sometimes, and specifically in connection with the book of Revelation, we talk about apocalyptic literature. This is a genre of literature that uses signs and symbols, okay, animals, things like this, the great sea that Daniel mentioned back up in earlier in Daniel chapter 7. That's what we're having here, but it's picturing, you might say, events for us, historical events. So if we know the order of these kingdoms and when they existed, who their leaders were in world history, we can look at these biblical prophecies and figure this out too. So this fourth and dreadful and terrible beast, and this is going to help us out too. It was different. It had 10 horns. That's representing 10 kings. Now notice here, Daniel 7 and verse 8. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up from among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there, in this horn, were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Today's an introduction, so we're not gonna dive fully into Daniel chapter 7 and verse 8. But if it is the case that Babylon represents that, is represented by that first beast, the lion with eagle's wings, and then Medo-Persia is represented by the bear, and Greece is represented by the leopard, then what we're reading here in Daniel chapter 7, verses 7 and 8 represents the Roman Empire, and these 10 horns would represent 10 kings from the Roman Empire, and then there's this little horn that comes up at a certain time, so we can figure this out, all right? I've seen a lot of people, when they read passages like this, whether it's Daniel or even some of Ezekiel's language or Zechariah or Revelation, people just give up. It's like, well, I don't know what in the world this is talking about. Why even study it? What benefit is there to study this? There's a lot of benefit. So today we're just kind of laying a foundation, and we're gonna detail all of this information. I'll probably have some charts and pictures to help us figure all this out. We'll look at some biblical maps and some world maps too. It's not, and that's the thing. So the Bible records these events, but it's not just the Bible. You have all kinds of secular history, secular historians, people who aren't necessarily concerned with the biblical text. They're not concerning themselves with biblical prophecy or God's will or anything like that. They're just historians. But when you even look at those secular historians and the track of history, it becomes a lot, I guess you'd say that these passages like this become a lot easier to understand. And I think important for us to understand. All right, so you have that in Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel 2, Daniel's dream in Daniel chapter 7, and then the chapters of, I would say really, Daniel chapters 8 and 11 are extremely helpful, particularly chapter 11. Let me just flip over there real quick on our screen here. Daniel chapter 11 is so detailed. I've got, so you guys know, if you've watched me for any length of time, I use a wide margin Bible, and Daniel chapter 11 is just full of notes based on obviously what Scripture says, but also based on the events of that are recorded in secular history that verify what Scripture says here, what's being prophesied by Daniel, things that are being revealed to him as a prophet. So we're gonna make all these connections, and I hope it's helpful to you. Hey, Kim, good to see you. Connie says, so many, even in the church, try to make it very mysterious and say we can't know what it represents. That's right. I think maybe that's just a natural reaction to this type of literature. Okay, we are not used to, as English readers in the 21st century, we're not used to this type of language, these type of descriptions. So we have to familiarize ourselves with them. But anyway, getting back to Daniel chapter 11, notice here, and again, Daniel repeatedly dates himself. Also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him, and now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. So, Daniel 11 is an extremely important chapter because it identifies, okay, what time period are we talking about? What kingdoms, and I'm highlighting these for those of you who are just listening to the podcast. Persia, the realm of Greece, these different kings, kings of the north and the south. All of these passages mean something. Now, just kind of a preview, the king of the south represents Egypt. The king of the north, as you'll keep reading here, Daniel chapter 11 and verse 6, represents Syria. But we're going to make all those connections and make this make sense, because there's a lot to be learned here. So I think that's kind of where I want to end today. I don't want to get into a whole lot more detail, because that just keeps opening other doors. So hopefully this little introduction has made some sense to you. As always, you can ask questions once the live stream is over. If you think of something, put it in the comment section here. You can send a message, whatever the case may be. If you watch on YouTube, the comment section is always available there too. So take advantage of that. Guys, I think that's it for today. I appreciate you all being on here. We'll pick back up tomorrow, and we're going to start laying out the timelines. Probably, like I said, I think it's good to have biblical maps, to have a good grasp of biblical geography, know where these kingdoms are and things like this. So we'll start doing some of that stuff tomorrow. But thank you guys for being on here, and that's it. Hope you have a good day, and hope to see you back here tomorrow at 11 o'clock.